You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston and with me this week I have Gareth. Hello, Gareth.
Hello again.
And we are continuing what we started previously, which is a look at the monthly range, the main range, the monthly range. At some point it kind of changed names without anybody particularly realising, I think. But that's what we're looking at. So we managed the first five releases last time. So we kind of got up to the Fearmonger, decided we both really enjoyed it. We've now heard at least one example of each Doctor in this range. But our next release to listen to brings us something new, which is a new companion. We've had existing Doctors, we've had existing companions, but we've never been introduced to a new companion. And again, I think this is great that it was a thing that Big Finish did early on. I'm glad they were open to the idea of sort of expanding beyond the limitations of which classic actors they had available at the time. So we're up to the Marion Conspiracy. Do you want to introduce us to it, Gareth?
Sure, yeah. So this one's Jacqueline Rayner, who... yeah, you'll see her pop up now and again. She had some dealings with the BBC Books range as well. Yeah, do you want me to just launch into it?
Why not?
Great. Okay, this review's a bit longer, but I promise it's for good reasons. So, this feels like a milestone for Big Finish. We've got our first new companion for audio in Evelyn Smythe, our first character rehabilitation in The Sixth Doctor. And while this isn't the first Big Finish not to closely evoke a TV era, more by accident than design, so far only Whispers of Terror and The Fearmonger have got that right, it's the first one to firmly suggest something else in its place. The Marion Conspiracy is unquestionably the start of a Big Finish era. It helps that the story is a bit unusual for TV, being almost a pure historical. I might even argue it's all the way there, since the only sci-fi thing here is something the characters brought with them. The only sci-fi element in Marco Polo is the TARDIS. Possession of that is key to the plot. Here, Evelyn's existence is at stake, because history is at a sensitive point. If she doesn't travel back with the Doctor and, unknown to her, personally implicate both her ancestors in a regicide plot, then, via the Doctor, position one of them alongside Elizabeth, history will change. The actual danger here is perhaps a stretch, depending on how you think timelines work. I had to listen to it more than once to be certain what was actually causing the problem, but I think it's a clever demonstration of how easily fates can change. The heart of the story is our way into a, shall we say, revised Sixth Doctor. This one's all about people doing what they feel is right, even if it's illegal or abhorrent. The Doctor becomes a great mediator. He doesn't fly off the handle at cruelty or malice. He tries to understand. It's a plum performance for Colin Baker, evoking all the highest doctorly ideals and none of his characteristic TV bluster. His attempts to reason with Mary are sensitive and moving, as are her polite rebuttals and cheerful insistence on burning people at the stake. Anna Rudin compels as the Queen, however wrong she is. Is it too much development too soon? Well, it's a clear 180 from Whispers of Terror. There are signs of a softened Doctor in The Trial of a Time Lord, but that's still the one where every other cliffhanger is a crash zoom into Colin's indignant nostrils. I think people have a point if they find this revisionism too sudden, however. Colin had been putting up with the brash perception of the role for over a decade at this point, so I can understand a sense of urgency. It's just a shame that there's such a specifically Season 22 release so soon before this one to underline the lack of connective tissue. Hang on, though, fans of Evelyn might point out, but that's the companion's influence, isn't it? And certainly this is stated later in the run. There's some of that here, with the glorious scenes of the Doctor unable to get a word in edgeways. He is completely unprepared for a companion like Evelyn, where none of his usual bluster will work. I don't think there's really time for that to take hold before his scenes with Mary, though. He's already a gentler man. Hey-ho, Evelyn is a revelation. Maggie Stables was made for this. Who would have thought that funny, intelligent and willful history professor would work better than chuckling hag with unknown accent? It's a great story for her, from her challenging the Doctor at every turn, to her using knowledge of history to inform the plot, to her compassion influencing the Doctor all over again. She has enough years to hold her own among strangers and threats. They really hit the ground running here. Everything that could possibly go right does so. There are a few niggles, depending on the listener, but none of them ought to matter much when listening to this. Jack Rayner is clearly brilliant, and the Marion Conspiracy is sublime. Hooray.
I think launching this new companion, and this new companion being a very, very different companion to anything we'd particularly seen in Doctor Who before, it was risky. And I think I'm going to use the word risky quite a lot while talking about these early monthly range stories, because they don't waste any time kind of bedding in their own identity, becoming their own thing. We do have the super traditional. That's definitely going to be something that we talk about before the end of this podcast episode. But there is also, there are also some very, very good, very solid, very experimental creative decisions. And I think at this stage, Evelyn is by far the best of those. I do think we're just seeing a direction that the Sixth Doctor had always been going in. I think that this is the direction that the Sixth Doctor would have gone in had the character lasted more than two seasons on screen. I think it's the direction that Colin Baker always wanted to take the character. I think it was always, let's be grumpy for a series or two, and then ease up a bit. And I think that is really important. I'm absolutely with you on the point about what is the actual danger to Evelyn here. It's sort of stated, and it's sort of, we get reminded about it throughout the story, but I guess what's missing is going into, when the characters go into history, they don't particularly know what it is they have to change or keep the same or whatever, whereas with other historicals where this can or can't happen, we know specifically what it is. You know, a lot of Doctor Who, it's, oh, well, we have to go back in time and stop, I don't know, Shura from detonating the bomb beneath all of the people at the peace conference in Day of the Daleks, that kind of thing. There's a very specific mission, whereas this is just, we need to go back in time and make sure everything's okay. But yeah, it's, you know, it has its twists and turns. It does work as a historical. I'm glad that straight out the door, Big Finish are making pure historicals. That's what we're going to refer to them as, because the TARDIS and the Doctor and the Companion don't count when you're referring to them that way, I think. We need the TARDIS to get there, as you said. So, yeah, I really like this. I really like Evelyn straight away. They get Evelyn absolutely right. I'm sure this is Jack Rayner magic. We love Jack Rayner on this podcast. And yeah, it's a really, really, really good, solid Doctor Who story that has a lot more resting on its shoulders than you would initially think, I think. But it does everything absolutely right. Yeah. Anything you'd like to add?
Probably only the bit in the review where I kind of list the things that Evelyn has to do in order to fix history. That's slightly my inference. I'm pretty confident that's right. I wonder if the reason there isn't necessarily a scene where the Doctor or Evelyn completely spells it out is because it's a bit negative, really. Because Evelyn has to, in effect, sort of doom one of her ancestors in order for history to get on the right course. So I do wonder if there was a point in the writing where they went, okay, so this is what the stakes are and what we need to do. If we state that, is that not going to give Evelyn a bit of a complex because she's had to cause some real difficulties for people in her own family? And, you know, they kind of go the other way where they have her deliberately, quite cheekily influence the Doctor into rescuing a couple of people from otherwise certain death. So, yeah, that's just something I wonder. If I ever have occasion to speak to Jack Rayner, I might try and ask that. But yeah, I don't think it hurts it at all. I think the previous times I've listened to it, I haven't really been clear at all on that particular plot point. And even then, it didn't bother me. I just think there's so much else going on that's really strong that you can kind of just dive in and enjoy it regardless.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the story is more enjoyable because it does sort of continuously have a bit of a tone of lightheartedness through it, you know, despite the fact that we're dealing with a historical figure that burnt a lot of people alive, and that's pretty unpleasant. It keeps a bit of a sort of a humorous, cheerful, lighthearted tone generally throughout. And that I think is to the story's advantage. And I think you'd lose that if it was, okay, Evelyn, we have to make sure your ancestor dies a very grim death.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm glad it is what it is. And to be fair, if that's all we can pick apart from it, I think it's a pretty damn good release, if that's the best we've got. Should we have a look at the next one?
Yes, absolutely.
So the next one, Daleks, for the first ever time, ever. It's The Genocide Machine by Mike Tucker. So go ahead.
Righty-ho. If you thought The Marian Conspiracy was a bit out of whack with the TV series, then you're in luck, as Mike Tucker has been working on his Terry Nation impression. And look, all snark aside, there is absolutely a market for trad-as-all-heck Dalek stories. This was their first appearance in Big Finish, which I'm sure added to the excitement at the time, not to mention adding a stamp of authenticity to Big Finish. And they sound great. Nick Briggs can do authentic Dalek voices, obviously, but Alistair Locke ensures there's also some variety here. You've got a spooky jungle planet, ancient ruins, Daleks, Dalek duplicates, someone called Tarrant, weird aliens. It's Terry-tastic. That said, if your interests lie anywhere at all beyond what's in this script, which on the great colour wheel of Doctor Who is somewhere between Planet of the Daleks and beige, then The Genocide Machine is going to be one of those stories that just trundles along until it stops. The plot is fine. There's a library containing all imaginable knowledge, and the Daleks want it so that they can be unbeatable. The problem is the follow-through. The Daleks lurk. They get access. There are unexpected aliens. At this point, episode 4, we learn the aliens are being enslaved by the library, so the whole thing is tainted, which is fairly interesting. Given that the Daleks want to steal it for nefarious ends, however, this idea feels a bit unexplored, or even surplus to requirements. Anyway, the Daleks lose. It isn't boring. Tucker paces the action well. Close enough. Welcome back, Terry Nation. Sylvester and Sophie are on good form, especially once the Doctor discovers the truth about the library. Sophie has fun playing a duplicate. That's about it, though. It's a perfectly cromulent couple of hours with the old exterminators. An easy listen. Just don't expect to remember much about it afterwards.
It's harmless, isn't it? I think that's the main word that comes to mind when I think about this one. It's absolutely harmless. It's not bad. It sets out to do something, and it does the thing it sets out to do very, very well. And I'm kind of glad it does. I'm kind of glad that our first Dalek story from Big Finish is nice and trad and straightforward. You can follow it from A to B to C without having to stretch your mind. I do think we're still working with the ace that we had in the Fearmonger, I mentioned last time, you know, we're doing something with Ace here. This isn't the Ace that we left behind in Survival. This isn't the Ace from the New Adventures. This is Big Finish's own Ace, and they are willing to kind of explore Ace a bit further. She has an independence that she didn't quite have before and all that kind of thing. And there is even a point where she kind of susses the library out before the Doctor does and goes, you know what, I'm not having anything to do with this. You know, the librarians are patronising Git. I'm out of here. Come and find me at the TARDIS later. So I like that. I do like the character called Tarrant. I like Bev. Bev comes back. Bev comes back in, is it Dust Breeding? It is Dust Breeding, isn't it?
Yeah, she's in some Bernice stuff as well.
Yes, and then becomes a Benny regular. So yeah, it's all good, you know, but the Daleks turn up and do Daleky things. The twist of there's a little bit more going on with the library than we first thought is a good one. It sustains its four parts. It doesn't feel overlong. It's not overcomplicated. It's just a nice, perhaps super trad. I think Planet of the Daleks is pretty accurate. Daleks, though, it even uses a Planet of the Daleks Dalek on the cover, doesn't it? It's the bloke with a torch on his face. It's a good, solid reintroduction to the Daleks. I do like the Dalek voice work on this. I believe there's a second actor doing Dalek voices as well. Is it Alistair Locke?
I think so, yeah, on the credits.
Yeah. Which I like Nick Briggs's Daleks, but I actually quite like the Daleks in this, and I can't actually differentiate between what's Briggs and what's anybody else. Yeah. But I did sort of notice when listening to this, the Daleks do sound a little bit different, and I do actually quite like it.
And I think that's quite true to the show, really, because, you know, over the years, we have had multiple actors working on it at the same time. Not every time, but, you know, it does happen. So I think there's nothing wrong with doing that. But, you know, they've moved away from that approach now, but that kind of makes these early ones a little more special in a way.
Yeah, I think you're right. Also worth noting, this is labelled as Dalek Empire 1. I'm just going to say that and leave it there for now. Should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, please.
Okay, well, the next one is Red Dawn. So we've had a Dalek story. Let's introduce another classic villain to the Big Finish canon. It's Ice Warriors. We know it's Ice Warriors because they're on the cover. What's also on the cover is the Fifth Doctor and Perry. It's a companion pairing we never completely really got in the classic era. Like, the Fifth Doctor meets Perry in Planet of Fire. He spends a lot of time with him in Planet of Fire. He spends a fair chunk of time with him in the Caves of Androzani. He regenerates at the end of Caves of Androzani. So we're essentially doubling here the amount of time the Fifth Doctor and Perry spend together in just this release. I'm glad Big Finish do this. I think it works. I'm a big fan of the Fifth Doctor and Perry as a companion combo. I'm a big fan of sort of inserting stories into that gap right at the end of the Fifth Doctor's era. I guess it's the bit of the Fifth Doctor's era that feels the most open-ended. But anyway, tell us how you reviewed it.
Okay. Red Dawn, a.k.a. the Tomb of the Cybermen, but with Ice Warriors. This is another hugely trad story after the Genocide Machine, with even more obvious influences. But it's Justin Richards, so it's also very tight. He manages to use those classic series influences as a starting point, rather than just as a template. The Ice Warriors are not Cybermen, after all, so you can tell a different story there. In this case, one prioritising the honour of the Martians and the comparative lack of it in some humans. It's a strong first impression, or reintroduction, depending on the listener, of the Troughton-era monsters, taking full advantage of just how inappropriate it is to label them monsters. There's not a huge amount to unpack. The plot is economical, and perhaps inevitably, the story runs very short. It's a good one for Peter Davison, showcasing the Fifth Doctor at his most optimistic and helpless. Admittedly an odd fit, though, for late season 21, when he seemed to have found a renewed vim. Nicola Bryant begins her second Big Finish era, Colin being more aimed towards Maggie Stables at this point, and it would be fair to say there isn't much for Perry to do, but she's still good here. Was this once intended for season 20 in Nyssa? Might make more sense on both fronts. The guest cast are solid, with Stephen Fuel dangerous as the worst of humanity, and Matthew Brenner compelling as the Ice Lord. This was back in the days when they brought in other actors for the monsters. The simple fact is that Big Finish love trad stories, so you might as well get used to them, and within the bounds of that, Red Dawn works very well. I have a feeling we disagree slightly on this one.
No, actually. I've not heard Red Dawn for a long, long time. It's been, it must be at least 5 years, minimum 5 years. I've heard a hell of a lot of Big Finish since then. And you listened to this before me. You did your review before I read it, and you told me what your review was. And I turned around and went, oh, no, this is the boring one, isn't it? And then I re-listened to it and I went, hang on, this is quite good. You're right, it's super trad. It's the Tomb of the Cybermen, but with Ice Warriors. And it does lean into the advantages of working with Ice Warriors and not Cybermen in this type of story. I totally agree. But it was the pacing that really got me. Like, for some reason, I had it in my head that this was really, really slow. It takes forever for the Ice Warriors to turn up. They do absolutely nothing. We plod around for a bit, and then the Ice Warriors sort of semi-sacrifice themselves. That was kind of how I remembered it being. But now I appreciated this. I sort of appreciated the conflict between the Ice Warriors and the Ice Lord, and, you know, those questions about honour. I did appreciate the pacing. It felt like things happened pretty quickly. It is a full episode before the Ice Warriors turn up, but it's a short episode. In fact, I think we might be pushing for the shortest main range release ever record with this one. But that's fine. It works. It doesn't outstay its welcome. And I actually think it's probably one of the more effective Big Finish uses of the Ice Warriors. I maintain that it is perhaps one of the less action-packed stories we've had so far. But this is the first time I've been caught out in my re-listens. This is the first time I have kind of gone, you know what? I liked that a lot more than I thought I did before.
Caught out in a good way, though. That's kind of nice to...
Yes. I'm hoping for more of that. Like, I'm hoping to revisit quite a few stories that I kind of thought, not sure about that one, and find that actually sort of 5 years later with a sort of more sensible head on, hopefully, I enjoy them a bit more. That was very enjoyable. That was good. The Fifth Doctor and Perry, we should talk about a little bit more, because we're not going to get a lot of the Fifth Doctor and Perry, just the two of them, because we have Erimem coming into it, and we're probably not going to get any Fifth Doctor and Perry again. I think we had a short trip a few years ago at some point, but I think that's been pretty much all the Fifth Doctor and Perry output we've had for best part of 20 years now, certainly 15 years. But I think they work well. I've never subscribed to this Androzani only has any real emotional impact if the Fifth Doctor's only known Perry for 10 minutes sort of theory. I've never bought it. So where do you stand on it? Should we have more Fifth Doctor and Perry, or is it sort of sacred ground, and does it cheapen the end of the Caves of Androzani?
I think that the end of Androzani being he doesn't even know this person, that does have value. I think it's valid to go, well, he's effectively ended his life in order to help this person. So I'm fine with that bit of canon. I would say I don't know how much they really thought about that when they actually wrote the Caves of Androzani, and Robert Holmes did. You know, I think that was probably more along the lines of he's the Doctor and this is the companion, and we need to kill the Doctor in this story. So this set of circumstances will do. So as much as I think it's good, and it works really well in hindsight, as kind of a defining quality of the Fifth Doctor, I think there's a little bit of revisionism going on there to kind of make it perhaps a little more of an emotional beat than it really was. So I don't think it's really like a sacred cow kind of thing. And to be honest, with Big Finish and any expanded media, I think to an extent that ship has sailed, really, with regards to, oh, we can't possibly insert stories here because of this reason and that reason. It's kind of like, you can though, and you do. So I sort of don't really agree with the objection the company came to a while later, where they went, nah, we're not going to do this anymore. Because I look around and I think, well, you know, not only is this not the only example, but it's led to some really good stuff. I mean, you think about all the stories they've done, admittedly mostly I think in Companion Chronicles with Sarah Kingdom. And if you actually sit down and watch the no one can sit down and watch the Daleks Master Plan, but you know, enjoy it in some format, it doesn't really work as an idea. Like, I don't think it really makes any sense to sort of insert however many years you want with Sarah Kingdom and tell stories. If you want to go by the Dalek Master Plan strictly, I think it is a bit of a stretch to say that Sarah could have spent any particular amount of time with the Doctor and Stephen. Having said that, those are some of the best Big Finish stories, so I don't care. You know, I don't think that's in any way a reason not to do it. If the ultimate aim of this should always just be do good stories, and they do. So with Perry, I think it's also worth exploring. Sorry, a bit of a tangent now, but I don't really like I really enjoy season 22. I like all of classic Doctor Who. That's fine, but I think the relationship between the Sixth Doctor and Perry in season 22 is weirdly toxic. And like, bearing in mind it started off with, you know, Twin Dilemma, where he goes a bit mad and tries to strangle her at one point. Obviously they recover from that, but I don't think they ever reach a point where Perry is clearly enjoying herself. I think throughout that year, Perry is having a fairly miserable time, and, you know, awful things are happening to her because it's just that era. It's video nasty, it's Vengeance on Varos turning into a bird, the Borad lusting after her, all of this awful stuff. She gets murdered in the end, for God's sake. So I think the Sixth Doctor era is very memorable for Perry. I think that banter with Nicola and Colin is fantastic, but if you look at Perry as a character, I think she has such a rough time that the last time I watched the collection box set, I came away from it thinking, get out of there. Like, go home. This is not, you're not having fun. So if you can kind of enliven Perry in any way, then I think you should give it a try, as long as you've got Nicola Bryant willing to do stories. And I think if the way to do that is to say, well, what would she have been like if she was with the Fifth Doctor, who, not to be mean about it, never tried to strangle her, then, you know, is that a more positive relationship? And we'll get into it, because we'll see more stories that put her to better use. And I think Red Dawn is a bit of a nothing example of, I really like Red Dawn, but I think it's a very nothing example of that relationship. Who knows, it might have been intended for a different pairing. But I think we see a lighter side to Perry when she's with the Fifth Doctor in certain stories coming up. And that doesn't mean you can't do that with the Sixth Doctor as well. There are some terrific, you know, here and there stories. We've got, you know, Ish coming up, which is fantastic. But yeah, I think long story short, it's worth trying anything, really, if you think there's going to be an improved kind of dynamic, or even just a good story at the end of it. And I think Perry and the Fifth Doctor is as good an excuse as any, really.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that, I think the Fifth Doctor and Perry work. I think Planet of Fire and Caves of Androzani give us enough evidence that these two characters together is something I would watch. I think it's something I'd find entertaining. You know, a lot of people will tell you that Caves of Androzani is the best Doctor Who story ever made. It's not my favourite, but from an objective point of view, I think there's an argument there. I think it could be made. And, you know, we've got the Doctor and Perry's relationship in that. That is a part of the story. I don't subscribe to this they've only known each other 5 minutes in Amber's Army thing. And that, as you say, there was no way that was the intention when Caves of Amber's Army was made. They weren't thinking that. They weren't thinking, ooh, big sacrifice at the end. And the Doctor sacrifices himself for somebody he barely knows. And, you know, you could make a similar argument for the first Doctor with Polly and Ben. Oh, we shouldn't touch that, because them witnessing his regeneration when they barely know him and still, you know, that influences their reactions in Power of the Daleks, that kind of thing. No, we've inserted loads of stuff there. I think Big Finish have even given them an extra companion in that era, haven't they, at some point? So, yeah, I don't get this sort of, you know, the way TV was made in the 60s, 70s and 80s was, if you needed a change of regular characters, you just did it and you got on. And Doctor Who did that. Only Fools and Horses did it. Grandad died. It's fine. Here's Uncle Albert. It's just the way series were made. You know, if an actor's not able to do it anymore, we put a different actor in. Or if an actor doesn't want to do it anymore in this case. So, yeah, I'm fine with the Fifth Doctor and Perry being a thing. And I'm glad Big Finish don't just sort of enter that era and explore it early on in the monthly range. They also add to it, because we're going to get Herrimum in the not too distant future at this point. So yeah, Red Dawn, sort of solid story. It does what it does. It does what it does well. It's nice and trad. It has something interesting to say about Ice Warriors, and I'm not sure a lot of Ice Warrior stories actually have something interesting to say about them. So it gets points for that. Let's move on from Red Dawn and the slight divergence into Fifth Doctor and Perry territory there. Let's go to our next story, because it's a cracker. I'm a big fan of it. Spectre of Lanyon Moore, which is... We're picking up Evelyn with the Sixth Doctor again pretty quickly. We've not had to wait too long since the Marion Conspiracy to see more of what goes on with these characters. So talk us through it.
Okay. Listening to this one felt like reading a Target novelization, specifically The Demons. It's got an ancient dig, a dangerous alien, wicked collaborators, and the Brigadier, not to mention bags of atmosphere. I'm quite confident that it's a comfort listen for people, one for cold nights indoors. None of that is to say it's a retread. True, the story has elements usually found in the Pertwee era, but it has its own flavour too. Excuse me. The alien slash monster, Sancreda, doesn't have any of Azal's nobility. Doctor Who baddies generally follow some sort of rules. They're almost sportsmanlike, even when they're destroying everything. This guy, on the other hand, is a mean, giggling psychopath. That makes everything feel a bit more dangerous, helped along by a tremendous mix of performance and sound design. Treating Toby Longworth's naturally booming voice so that it comes out scratchy and squeaky is a smart move and a hard-to-forget result. We also sidestep another cliché when it comes to Sancreda's collaborators. There's no mind control here, only small people hoping to get one over on the world with a useful ally. Whilst I'd sympathise with you if you said, isn't that just a different cliché, it's an approach that makes these people as itchily difficult to deal with as Sancreda himself, so I think it makes the story more satisfying. The supporting cast add a lot of colour too, with Toby Longworth pulling double duty and Susan Jameson, later of Hornet's Nest fame, superb as a disgruntled tea lady. Since the last time I listened to this, I managed to forget that it was the next story featuring Evelyn Smythe. She's wonderful, forthright and unafraid to investigate, but she perhaps gets the short straw within the plot, which might explain my forgetfulness. To borrow the Brigadier's phrase, she does a lot of yomping back and forth. The Doctor and the Brig have a lovely rapport, and yes, it's nice to give that combo a proper outing. Brief handshake in Dimensions in Time, be damned. Nick Courtney is a more sedate Brigadier than usual here, retired and everything, but he still gets his hero moment at the end. You could probably debate this story's elegance or originality, but I can't bring myself to mind on either front. It's simply very enjoyable and a pleasure to revisit. Something I'll add that's not in the review is I had forgotten, or maybe I didn't even know, the thing about this originally being intended for Sarah Jane and the Fourth Doctor. I think to some extent, that might explain why Evelyn doesn't have a great deal to do that is very specifically sort of Evelyn. You could almost substitute her for somebody else. So I don't think that aspect is bad. I think Maggie Stables is so good that it doesn't matter. But the minute you said that in the previous podcast, the kind of light bulb went off over my head and I thought, yeah, that's why, I think. Because you could kind of put somebody else into that role quite easily, I think. But not in a detrimental way, it's fine.
From what I recall, it was this one was the one they showed to Tom Baker and said, come on, it'll be great. And Tom wasn't having it. So the impression I get is it was written with Tom Baker in mind. And it's a very, very season 13 story.
Yeah.
Like it's got more than a whiff of Zygons about it, for example. So that's kind of where my thinking was when I mentioned that last time. And I suppose the other point of view is we've got this new companion and she's only been in one release so far. We don't really know much about her yet. Basically, all that's established is history and cakes. So that was perhaps all the writer had to go with, history and cakes. I don't know. Either way, I think it all holds together. I think it's a really good story. We've got some proper sound treatment on the voice of the villain, and maybe it sounds a little less sinister than intended. You've sort of got a bit of a high-pitched, giggly... It could be a comedy alien voice. It's not in this. It's meant to be a very serious threat. And as you say, the villain's a proper nasty piece of work, psychopath type. But I think that voice could easily fall into a comedy script and we'd all be fine of it with it. Sort of think of like something with the Porcians or something like that. It's nice and trad. It does it well. I think you're right with demons. I think I'm right with Zygons. They're the stories it's kind of picking about, and the Sixth Doctor never really got one of those on telly, so it's new territory for this Doctor, and he does work really well with the Brigadier, and I'm really glad we have this. You know, I will argue to the ends of the earth that Big Finish did not use Nicholas Courtney enough when he was still with us, but I'm so glad we got a proper story with the Sixth Doctor. If nothing else, proper story with the Sixth Doctor. I regret to say I don't think I'll be saying something similar when we get to Minuet in Hell about the Eighth Doctor, but that's a couple of podcasts away yet. I like this. I like the fact that it turns out the sort of overly happy, smiley British woman turns out to be the treacherous villain as well. We saw it coming a mile off, but it's nice and comforting. It's like putting on a nice warm dressing gown, isn't it? Oh, the obvious villain's a villain. But this story's so trad, I'm okay with that. I think this does demonstrate that you can do trad really well. Like this is traditional. This is season 13. Well, this is seasons 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Done really, really well. That cozy Earth, Unity, let's investigate, ancient villains, all of it. And yeah, I really enjoy this one. When I started listening to the Monthly Ranger game, when I put on Sirens Redux to begin preparing for this run of podcasts, this is the story I was looking forward to getting to the most, the first story I was looking forward to getting to the most. And I think I would pick it as my favourite out of these first 10 releases as well. Fearmonger's in with a shout too, don't get me wrong, but I think I'd go with this one. It's good. It's a combination of a lot of things that work. We've got a nice trad story. We've got Evelyn and the Sixth Doctor, who are already brilliant together. We've got the Brigadier. It's just lots of nice pieces of a jigsaw to all have together, and the fact that it's a really good story is just a nice bonus.
There's a really good bit where the Brigadier instantly recognises the Doctor just because he's an appalling dresser. He doesn't even need to know anything. He just kind of goes from context. Yep, I figured this. You dress like that. You have a companion. You're talking to me like you know me. No further questions. And I just think that's a real mark of respect for the character.
Yes, I'm a big fan of that. We really, really don't need an episode or two's "Are you the Doctor? I don't believe you" kind of spearheady, paddy. No, there's no need for it. They're even Mordred Undead paddy type stuff. I know it was sort of part of the plot of Mordred Undead, but it doesn't have to drag on a bit. I do like the, "Oh, yeah, you're the Doctor, aren't you? Okay, as we were." And it says a lot about the Doctor and the Brigadier's friendship as well, that that's where they are. Just pick up and carry on. It's good stuff. Shall we move on then to the next story on our list, which is Winter for the Adept? It's Andrew Cartmell. It's not the Seventh Doctor. It's the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa. So it's their second turnout. Now, before I let you get on, I'll just remind listeners that last time I said I get this one and I get Land of the Dead mixed up all the time. It's the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa. They're in snow. The cover is blue. And certainly Land of the Dead I don't find to be particularly memorable. So let's see how we get on here. But I'll let you go first.
Okay, thank you. I had never heard this one until now. Funny how audios can fall down the back of the sofa for years. It's quite a strange mixture with Andrew Cartmell writing for the Fifth Doctor, Nyssa, as opposed to the Seventh Doctor and Ace. Unfortunately, I found the characterization a bit off. Nyssa is unusually sassy throughout, aiming constant barbs at the Doctor. Gone is her usual sensibility. Meanwhile, he takes on a more professorial role as he investigates a mystery. It's too tempting to suggest that Cartmell is going into his comfort zone here. These aren't the Seventh Doctor and Ace, as played by different actors, but their dialogue and actions feel like they're leaning that way. It's particularly hard to picture Davison's Doctor accidentally teleporting Nyssa to God knows where. Oh well, they're quite good parts for Sutton and Davison anyway. Both sound very engaged. The mystery is quite enjoyable. An all-girls school is apparently haunted. This has something to do with two wayward students. One of them is played by India Fisher. Also present are a couple of teachers and, rather awkwardly, a much older suitor for one of the students, Babylon 5's Peter Jurassic. Not much is certain for the first three episodes, which leads to a rather hurried final part where it all comes out. There is a ghost, but he's benign. The girls do have psi powers, a Cartmell favourite, but they're not the problem either. The aliens the Doctor was investigating are hiding in plain sight, using all of this for their own ends. The aliens are disappointing. The Spillagers, a name that unfortunately suggests a bunch of guys who can't walk across the room holding a pint, are entirely malevolent, but also mostly hypothetical. The ones here The ones here are only a vanguard. The real force isn't here yet. What are they like, besides mean? It doesn't really come across. And where they only manifest in the final episode, although the Doctor's frequent hints make this outcome inevitable, they feel somewhat diminished. It's a decent production, with the feel of an isolated school and eerie touches like a piano played by nobody. The characters are likeable, including the ghost. All the same, though, it's ostensibly a ghost story that isn't trying to be scary, as well as a mystery with no real movement until the final stretch. I liked it, but I found it a bit of an odd duck.
It's definitely got that whole scientific-y ghost story feel about it. I just struggle to connect with an awful lot of this, like the setting of a school in the middle of nowhere that nobody can actually approach because the weather's so bad. The sort of idea of the two students being left being absolutely nothing like students at a finishing school at all or anything like that. And I'm sorry, I know it's even explained in the story, but I am never, ever, ever going to get over the fact a character is called Peril. It's literally explained where the name came from in the story, which kind of makes me think even Andrew Carmel thought it was absolutely flipping ridiculous, but decided to go with it anyway. I can't get past it. It's good. It's creepy enough. I like the fact that the Doctor's barely in the first episode. Like, for a good chunk of that first episode, this is Nyssa's story. And I kind of wish that continued a bit longer, but the moment the Doctor arrives, Nyssa just loses all independence. In fact, I think she's basically stood next to the Doctor for everything that happens after that, like the events of the rest of it, whereas Nyssa sort of exploring without the Doctor, that was an interesting angle. And I kind of wish there was slightly more of it. Again, Peril's relationship with Peter Jurassic's character. It's great that we've got Peter Jurassic in a Doctor Who, by the way, a big Babylon 5 fan. That's kind of... it kind of comes out of nowhere and goes nowhere. Like, he was an untrustworthy enough character before. We realised he had a thing for schoolgirls of age, but still schoolgirls. And that's kind of that. That's all that adds. Oh, the creepy guy's a bit creepy. That's it. yeah, it's good. I agree that the fourth part feels a little bit rushed. There's a reveal that a character we've had with us all along is a villain, and it doesn't really have much impact. And then there's another reveal that a character that's been with us all along is a villain, and it doesn't have much impact. It just feels like it reached a point in the story where it went, okay, we actually need to, you know, have these spillagers in it now. Here they are. But it's, you know, I'm quibbling, I'm picking. It's a very, very entertaining story. It has some good cliffhangers. And I like the way the Fifth Doctor is written in this. I think we sort of get... it has a little bit of a whiff of the Fifth Doctor in Frontios about it. And Frontios, I think even Peter Davison has said, next to Androzani, is his sort of, in terms of his performance, it's the one he kind of picks out as one that he enjoyed. Because he got to be the Doctor that he wanted to be in Frontios. I think Christopher H. Bidmead wrote the Fifth Doctor Davison wanted and not necessarily the Fifth Doctor he was. And I think we get a bit of that here as well. And I think it's partly a Cartmell writing it that way thing and partly a Peter Davison going, ooh, I can be Frontios' Fifth Doctor in this, look at the script kind of thing. And it works. It works well. And it's a version of the Fifth Doctor that we do get to see a lot more at Big Finish, but not one we get to see when Christopher H. Bidmead actually writes a Fifth Doctor story for this range, which are a long way off, but that's a disappointment I'm kind of already braced for.
Yeah, I don't think I'll disagree when we get there. We'll see. It could be like Red Dawn for you, where we suddenly go, oh yeah, actually, that one works.
Yes, maybe Renaissance of the Daleks will have a renaissance. But until then, this is what we've got to work with. So we've done five more, and I've enjoyed all of these, even the ones that I don't think are as great. I'm thoroughly enjoying, and that's nice. I think these sort of first, I guess it's the first 50 releases. They come with their very own sort of brand of nostalgia, don't they?
Yeah.
Early Big Finish, there's something about it that the novelty still exists, and that novelty does seem to wear off once we hit Zagreus. But I think with everything, even now, 25-ish years later, it's still sort of very easy to listen to these and go, oh yeah, this was great, this was brand new Doctor Who, and it is brand new Doctor Who with the original actors, and we're being all brave and experimental, and even the traditional stories have something to love in them and all this kind of thing. And it's going to be interesting to see sort of at what stage of our going through these releases does that sheen wear off? Like I say, I think I can pinpoint it to around release number 50. I think it is around Sagreus somewhere, but we'll see if that holds as well. So that was five more. We're 10 stories into the monthly range, only 265 more to go. And it's good. I'm enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying it as well.
I am. Yeah, it's like I say, I hadn't even heard Winter for the Adepts, so hopefully there's more little surprises to unearth along the way.
Yes. Can you sort of pinpoint any you've not heard before, or is it just a case of when you get to it, you're going to listen to it and go, this is new?
I feel like the latter chunk. I mean, I know I heard all of the last kind of sort of flurry of releases, but ones that I've come across just kind of seen advertised, like the Contingency Club and Zoltis, stuff like that, kind of, I think, 220 plus. I'm probably a bit hazy on. But there might, like I say, there might be others, but I'm not sure. It's the top of my head, I don't know. I'll know when I get there, though, and I'm not familiar at all.
Yeah, I guess it'll just be sort of interesting to... I like the idea of shoving headphones on, starting a Doctor Who and going, ooh, this is new, without even realising.
Yeah.
But I think I'm now talking from the fairly jaded position of having heard it all. I'm not aware of any, certainly full cast, Big Finish stuff that I've, Doctor Who stuff that I've not listened to. I think I'm probably just missing out on a few Companion Chronicles and Short Trips.
Yeah, I've got some gaps there as well.
So it'll be interesting to see what strikes you as new and how you react to it. But yeah, in the meantime, we'll leave it there. We've got another episode of Spodcast ready to go. We're going to continue with this because I'm having so much fun with it. I'm really enjoying dipping into this range, and I'll crack on with listening, and hopefully we will be back for more very soon. So I'll say thank you and goodbye, Gareth.
Thanks again.
Goodbye now.